Chol Cheshvan, Wednesday the 30th of October, Dr. Sholem Springer. Truth is sometimes difficult to see.
Good morning to you all. You're going to have to put up with my rather bad throat, but I think I'll manage to get my voice to the end of the room. And the shiur I would like to present today is actually the shiur given by Rabbi Mordechai Miller Zatzal. It is not one of his published shiurim, so you won't see it in Shabbos shiurim, the ones he gave to the Sem girls, for example. And in fact, he has a sefer written in Hebrew, I should say, actually, Ivrit. I don't know why he wrote it in Ivrit, but he did. Or rather, he had it written for him, I understand. Called Oilas Shabbos v'Shabbatei. It's not a very well-known sefer, but he's got other shiurim. So you will not find this shiur published in any of Rabbi Miller's publications, and I was lucky to hear it and take notes, and therefore I'd like to present it to you today. And it deals with the end of the Sedra, and in fact, if I may say this, the highlight and the main story of the Sedra, which is, of course, the giving of the brochas initially to Esav. But in fact, how it worked out was that the brachas were given to Yaakov. And the psukim start off in the following way, in Kapitel Chafzai. Vayiki zokein Yitzchok, it was when Yitzchok became old, vatichenu einov mirois, and his eyes dimmed so that they could not see. Vayikro es Esav benoya godoil, and he called to Esav, his eldest son, and Esav said, I am ready. That's what the translation of Hineni is. I'm ready, command me, and I will carry it out. Yitzchok says, I'm old. This is the second time he's mentioned that he's old. And he gives Esav instructions. Take up your tools, your weapons, your sword, your bow, say asodeh v'tsudoli tzayit, and go and hunt and capture an animal for me. Vaseli matame, make it into a delicious dish, kasher havti, the way I love it, v'avioli, bring it to me, so I can eat it, and v'avur tevaruch v'nafshi b'terem, almost so that my soul can bench you before I die. Okay, let me get the parasha. The Mephoreshim say that Esav was such an expert marksman that he could attach a knife, a chalaf, on the end of his arrow, shoot the arrow in such a way that it actually shechted the animal and made it kosher. Okay, and the Torah talks about him as being extraordinary. Which what? Which? Very good. Very good, yeah. Okay, but anyway, it's a shechita such that Yitzchok et of it. That's all we need to know. Okay, so that is the background to Yitzchok's instructions to Esav. And he says that he wants this meat, and we know it's deer meat that he is asking. Now, the fact is that he mentioned twice in these few psukim that he was old. In fact, in Tanakh, we have a character who's really, really much younger than Yitzchok is at the moment, a man called Chushi ben Arki, and he was a gentleman who gave succor to David HaMelech. Well, it wasn't Melech just at that moment, but he was on the run from his son Avshalom. There was a rebellion, and he was in great danger, and this Chushi ben Arki gave David a great amount of sustenance, and he fed his men as well. And eventually, when David HaMelech returned to Yerushalayim and the kingdom was stable, he wanted to reward him, and he asked Chushi ben Arki, come back with me, I'll make you a banquet, I'll feed you, I really want to make a suda for you. And Chushi, now at the age of 80, says to David HaMelech, what do you want to do that for me? I'm so old, I can't tell the difference. The Pasuk says, Asha Oichel v'Asha Eshteh, I can't tell the difference in the taste of what I eat and what I drink. So, don't bother making a banquet for me because my taste buds are sort of past it and therefore I can't. Now, Yitzchok is very much older than Chushi Arki and he is saying that I want this meat that I love. I want this meat. He says, Hashem Havti, give me this meat. And therefore, this is a bit of a conundrum that we have. Now, we learned previously that Yitzchak loved Esav. It says, "Vayev Yitzchak es Esav kitzayit befit." Very well-known pasuk. Rashi tells us, "Katargumoy." The Targum says, "Viricham Yitzchak yas Esav," and Yitzchak loved Esav. "Are metzeda have ochil," because he ate of his tzedah, the meat that Esav brought back home, because he had hunted it. Yitzchak loved to eat, and therefore he loved his son. And we have a look at the Ramban. And the Ramban talks about this love that Yitzchak has for this meat. And on this same pasuk, Kitzayit Befiv, we all know Rashi's pshat is that Esav was a very, very skillful with words, and he managed to fool Yitzchak in asking very frum shaylus, how do you mass assault? But we are dealing with another pshat, that Vayev Yitzchak Esav Kitzayit Befiv means that it was something to do with the tzayit, something to do with the animal that he had captured. And the Ramban says, if we have a problem with the pasuk where Yitzchak says, "I love this meat," he says, "Vitoki nefarish," says the Ramban. "Vayev Yitzchak Esav," the meaning of these words, that Yitzchak loved Esav, "Bavua, ki befiv shel Yitzchak tzayit tomit," because in the mouth of Yitzchak was this meat all the time. The meat that Esav had captured, had hunted. Yitzchak longed, yearned for this meat all the time, all day. Kol hayom. The tomi du befiv, he would keep it in his mouth, if you translate this literally. Lo yoichel davache, he wouldn't eat anything else. For breakfast, he didn't have cornflakes. He had meat that was hunted by Esav. Lo yoichel davache. Hu amevi loy, and it was Esav that brought it to him. Kasha Oma Ish Yodea Tzayit. And Mr. Kaufman, this is the answer to your question. The Pasuk says, Ish Yodea Tzayit. When the Torah tells us somebody knew something or somebody did something, it always means in a sort of superlative manner. So when the Pasuk says, Ish Yodea Tzayit, the Esav knew how to hunt, he knew how to hunt. Okay, like nobody else. He was absolutely unique in his ability to hunt. So he could even do it in such a way he could bring back a kosher animal having hunted it. So the Ramban has just told us that Yitzchak loved this meat and he had it in his mouth all the time. And this is, you know, a very, very strange, this is not our image of Yitzchak of you. One of the others that is portrayed as some sort of gourmand, he's some glutton, that's for sure, to say that he's a connoisseur of food and he loves his food in a certain way. And it just doesn't fit the picture of our image of Yitzchak Avinu, of our forefather Yitzchak. Can't be. So there must be something about this meat which we haven't yet uncovered. And the difficulty, if you like, is compounded in a way, because we read the first few psukim about the instructions of Yitzchak to Esav. Now let's have a look at Rivka's reaction. Rivka Omro El Yaakov. Now Rivka says to Yaakov Ben Olema, "Hine Shemati Zavichem Medavay Al Esav Achicha Lemay." I heard your father speaking to Esav, and this is what he said: "Havi'ali Tzayid, Va'aseli Matamim." Bring me this hunted meat, and bring me the good food, the delicious food, Va'achela, and I can eat it. Va'borcha Lifnei Hashem Lifnei Moisi, and I will then bench you before I die. Atavani. She says to Yaakov, "Shema Bakoyli." Now you listen to me. What I'm going to command you, lech no elatzay, go to the sheep backyard, the sheep the backyard, v'kachli mishom shnei gadoy izim tovim, and bring for me two really nice kid goats, ve'ese oisom matamim, and I will prepare them as delicious food la'avicha, kasher ohei, the way he loves it, the way he likes his food, I will prepare it from those gadoy izim. So he'll bench you when you bring in the meat. Now, Rashi says on these words, Kashe Ohe, when Rivka says to Yaakov, "I'm going to prepare the meat the way Yaakov loves it," Rashi makes a very strange remark. Rashi says, "Kitam ha-gedi, kitam ha-tzvi." The tam, the taste of gedi, of goat meat, or kid goat meat, is the same or indistinguishable from the meat and the taste of venison. Now, this is a little bit of a disparity, is it not? Yeah, it makes a difference. We've got a kasha. You know, we have a little bit of a kasha here. Because here's Yitzchak, saying to Esau, go and have the meat, because this is the meat I love. And I want you to bring it back and bring it for me. And therefore, obviously, he can discern in some way that this Gedi meat, this Tzvi meat is very, very important to him. And now Rashi is telling us, if you take a Gedi out of the backyard, he can't tell the difference. I'll prepare in such a way that he won't be able to tell the difference between venison and this goat meat. So which is it? Mimarashah. If it's very, very different, if he can tell the difference, then Yaakov's going to lose the battle right away. As soon as he takes the first mouthful, he's going to be caught. He's going to be caught out because Yitzchak can tell the difference. If it tastes no difference, why is he telling Esau, go out into the field, which is quite a melacha, and hunt the animal down and bring it back? He could have just said to Esau, look in the backyard, we've got some goats. Go and bring us some goats. So Moroshok, if it's the same, we have a problem, and if it's different, we have a problem. So which is it? Same or different? Now, when we read these psukim in the first place, something very interesting that the posuk said, that there's a word which is repeated over and over again. And he says as follows. You may have noticed this. Hininoz Kanti Lo Yidati Yomosi. The Yitzchak says to Esau, Sudo Li Tzayid. That's the first Li. Vasei Li Matamin. Make me the Matamin. Kashir Haptav. Or be your Li. Li, Li, Li. Every single instruction Yitzchak gives to Esau, he has the word Li. The Shachal HaTayr remarks that this is very interesting, that there's all this Li. Why Li? Repeated at all, over and over again, like I said before. Was Yitzchak a person that wanted everything for himself? He was greedy, he wanted this meat for me, bring it for me, do it for me. Now, there is a Medrash which tells a nice story about the relationship between Rabbeinu HaKodesh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and Antoninus Pius. Antoninus Pius was a Roman princeling, and he made friends with Rebbe, and they had these discussions. The Gemara talks about it, how they make tunnels so they can meet secretly. But here is a story about a visit that Antoninus Pius paid to Rebbe on Shabbos. Shteitazen. Rabbeinu have also suda l'Antoninus b'Shabbos. Rabbeinu HaKodesh made a suda for Antoninus on Shabbos. And by the way, both these gentlemen were extremely wealthy. Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, as we know, he had unseasonable vegetables and fruit on his table all year round. And this Roman prince, we can imagine, he was extremely rich. So he sits down to this meal, Hevia Lefonov Tavshilim Shel Tsoinen. He brought cold food because they didn't have the facilities to make hot food because it was a Shabbos. Ochel Mehem V'Orav Loi. Antoninus ate of them and he was very pleased. He got very, very satisfied and he had great enjoyment. It was a very tasty meal. Also Suda B'choil, sometime later, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi made him another Suda, but this time it was a weekday. And now on this occasion, Hevia Lefonov Tavshilim Shel Roischim. Now they brought piping hot food before him. And Antoninus' reaction to this new meal was as follows. He says to him, Amalai, Arva Li Yosim Elu. Actually, the meal you gave me on Shabbos, I enjoyed much more than today's meal. Although today's meal was piping hot, and last time it was a cold meal, nevertheless, I enjoyed that cold meal much, much more. Amalai, so Rebbe said to him, you know why? Because tavlin echad heim chasein. Because this meal had one tavlin, one spice that was missing. So he's Amalai, v'chiyesh kolorin chosa klum. As I said, the very wealthy people, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi had everything. Is the Rebbe's larder, is Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi's larder missing anything at all? How can that be? He says yes. Rebbe says yes. There's one thing missing. Amalei, Shabbos hu chosa. Shabbos was chosa. Shabbos is chosa from today's meal. And he might have all the kashmirs, all the warmth, etc. of the meal. But you're missing, and you picked up the tam Shabbos. Even though the meal was cold, you picked up the tam Shabbos. And that's the point that's going on here. That, you know, sometimes one can pick up, and certainly a person who's sensitive, as obviously Rav Antoninus, not Rav, Antoninus Pius, was sensitive, and he picked up the Tam Shabbos, and he noticed the difference. Rav Miller tells the following nice story. It's about two brothers that ran a business in the city of London, and the business was doing quite well, and they worked hard all week, and they had one thing that they did every single Sunday. Every Sunday, they would go to Potter's Bar. You know Potter's Bar, it's north of London. And there is a wonderful golf course. And they used to play golf every Sunday. That was their enjoyment. They looked forward to it. On the golf course, they played golf 18 holes, yeah, in the morning, and 18 holes in the afternoon. They really loved their golf. Anyway, years went on, time went on. And one looked at the other one day while they were on the golf course and said, you know, call him your uncle, our business in the city is going quite well. And we come here every Sunday and we enjoy ourselves so much. And we're getting on in life. Why don't we appoint a manager to run our business? Maybe he won't run it as well as us, but appoint a manager to run the business and we can come here every day and enjoy ourselves every day. The other person agrees. Yes, so that's what they did. Appointed the manager, etc. And they turn up on Sunday after they appointed the manager. Yeah, the usual golf, 18 in the morning, 18 holes in the afternoon. If you know what golf is, I suppose you all know what golf is. It's somebody taking a long stick with some lump or club at the end, and you've got a little white ball, and you put the little white ball on its stand, and you give it a zets, as they say in Yiddish. Yeah, a whack. And the ball goes flying towards a tiny little hole. And you're meant to get it in the hole. Of course, you don't get in the hole first time. Then you walk up to the ball, and you tap it in, or you give it another hit, and that's the game of golf. It's a game of golf like all games. They're mindless, but they do something for somebody. And they used to do this.
What do you do on Sundays?
What do I do? Right, good question. What do I do on Sundays? So, nothing, as I should tell you, there's nothing wrong with playing golf on Sundays, if that's what you need, we'll see. So, they used to do this, and that's the game of golf. And the fact is that they came on Sunday and they went home and they said, tomorrow, you're not going to the office, yeah, you come here, yeah, sure. Both get the turn up on Monday morning and they play golf and already the golf does not seem to be exciting them as much as it did on this Monday. Comes Monday evening, tomorrow we come back, yeah, all right, okay, we come back, okay, slight reluctance in the voice. They turn up on Tuesday morning and they're playing golf, they're playing 18 holes by midday. One looks at the other, you see. One says to the other, you know, we're a little bit like the animals. They pop out of little nests and little thickets and they take some food and they then rush back again. Like us, we have savages here in the middle of the field. Somehow or other, this whole thing doesn't make sense anymore. We're not enjoying it anymore. And they both agree, they're not enjoying it anymore at all. So Tuesday, let's go back to the office. So back they go to the office. What went wrong here? What happened? And the answer is that previously, when we played this golf on Sunday, it had meaning, it had purpose. Yeah, they worked all week in order to feed their families, in order to get a parnasa, and they needed some recreation. Fair enough, they needed some recreation, so they came and played golf every Sunday, and this released their tensions, whatever it did for them, perfectly mutter to play, you know, or to do some things that you need. Nothing wrong with it at all, but all of a sudden, when the golf became self-serving, when it was only for its own sake, then Gamma Nefesh, the nefesh is not satisfied by something that's purely for itself. The golf had no meaning. It lost all meaning, and because it lost all meaning, it lost all tam. And the interesting thing in Hebrew, the word tam has two meanings, has two translations. The Ramban always heads his comments with the word tam adova. Tam, it doesn't mean taste. Meaning. Tam means meaning, but tam also means taste. Because when something loses its meaning, when something loses its purpose, it becomes tasteless. You know, it's very nice. On a hot day, have an ice cream that has purpose. That's wonderful. Cools you down, whatever. If you want to have a 10th ice cream, yeah, that will be, you know, purposeless. You will begin to hate the stuff. Okay, it has no purpose anymore. You're just doing it for the sake of. So similarly, tam and the meaning, having meaning and purpose and taste go together. So, let's get back to our story. When Esav went hunting, and he went off, then what Rivka did was this. She then repeats what Yitzchok said to Esav. Hovir litzayid, he said. She's quoting Yitzchok. He said, Hovir litzayid, Aseli matam. Notice that she picks out those words where that li is here again. Li. She said that Yitzchok said to Esav, do it for me. And I can bench you. Vatov li. Shema b'koili, lech no alatzem, kach li, she says. Bring that goat to me, for me. Do an act of kibbudim. Very insistent on doing that. And the fact is that is what Esav did. On each occasion they went hunting for his father, and in this particular instance, his father insists that the total kavana for why you're going hunting is for me. Do an act of kibbudim. Bring it to me and shecht it for me and prepare it for me. And all the rest of the instructions that he gave him, do it for me, do it as an act of kibbudim. And Esav, as we know, carried out kibbudim, you know, to a fault, so to speak. He really did it in an exceptional way. And we know that he wore special clothes because when she sent Yaakov in to get the brachas, it says Vatikov Rikvah's big day Esau Benar Godol Hachamudos, those special clothes. Not Midrashim about it, not Mephoshim, what these clothes were, but they were Hamudos, they were royal, they were very, very special. And that is how Esau stood in front of his father, with these very special clothes. He carried out Kibbadav to a great extent, to a perfect extent, such that Omer Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel makes this remark in Yerushalmi, Kol Yoma Hu Yisi Meshamish Azava. I served my father all my days. V'loi Shimashti Echad Mimea She'esof Shimish Azavi. But I didn't manage to serve my father 1% of what Esau did, because I came from my work and I stood in front of him sometimes in my dirty clothes. Esau would never stand in front of his father in dirty clothes, and he would always put on those very special chamudos clothes, very special clothes, in order to stand in front of his father.
And you couldn't see.
And what?
And
Yitzchak couldn't see. Oh, good point. Nice. So, there is a lot of raid here, and I just want to stop for a moment, and I'm conscious of time. That whether Esau did things in the sense that we would, that the Torah would approve that he was now tzaddik or something, because he did kibbadah, he did it. What the Midrashim, what Mephoshim tell us is there are two actions to every mitzvah. There's the way you do it and the perfection with which you do it, and there's also the intention, and both are judged separately. So Esau certainly did the mitzvah perfectly. What his intentions were may have been something very, very different. If I can quickly tell you a medrash, which is most interesting in this connection, it says as follows, that when Esau died, he came upstairs to Shemayim, and you know, there's a pearly gates or whatever, and he saw the Malach Gabriel, and of course the Malach Gabriel doesn't want to let him in. He's a Rosh HaGomah. So Esau says, wait a minute, Rosh HaGomah, but there is a mitzvah that I did properly and perfectly. I did kibbutz perfectly. And Gabriel doesn't know what to do. And all the others come out. And they too, they don't know what to say. They don't know what to say. Esav is claiming that he can get in. And we know there's a Rambam on Rotsa Kodesh Baruch Lezakas. It's true, if you can hear him. Torah mitzvahs, the Rambam says there, on his Pirush Mishnah is, if we do one mitzvah properly, that's our ticket into Gan Eden. That's our ticket into Olam Habo. That's why Rav Shlomo gave us tens of thousands of mitzvahs, in order that at least one should be right, and proper, and lishma, perfect. So Esav says, look, I did it. I did that. So the others had nothing to say. They couldn't say anything at all. We look at the end of the Sedra, won't quote it other than the relevant phrase. The fact is that it needs a Kodesh Baruch Hu to intervene. Because they had nothing to say, he did the mitzvah, so let him into Olam Habo. The Baruch Hu says, hey, wait a minute. But didn't you say, after this whole Maisa was over, Yikrivu Yumei Evel Avi? I'm hoping for my father's death. Yikrivu, it should come soon. Yikrivu Yumei Evel Avi, it's going to come soon, and then I will kill Yaakov. I've got to wait till my father dies. Oh, there's other pshatim as well, but basically it means I'm hoping for my father's death or sadness. Is that the way a person who keeps kibbutz, the way Esau kept kibbutz, is that the way he feels? That he wants his father to die? So even there, he failed. So the Baruch Hu's got to intervene, and the gates were shut against him. And then there is, you know, why somebody does kibbutz v'ayim. Rav Miller's got a beautiful shir, kibbutz v'ayim, by Koros HaTov, I recommend it. Of why is it, and I think he had, in the 50s, maybe you remember, there were these criminal gangs, one of them was called the Craig Brothers. The Craig Brothers, very, very famous. They terrorized the East End, absolutely. But they were very nice to their parents, apparently. And Rav Dessler's got a whole shir, doesn't mention the Craig Brothers at all. Why these Rishoyim, sometimes you find, they're very nice to their parents. And he works out that, in fact, there's a certain self-interest. Let me just tell you a very short story. Self-interest, like, you know, insurance for old age. There was a story of a person that was dragging his old father, very old already, is dragging him to the workhouse. Come on now, you're going to work and pay your way? And he's halfway there, and the son says to his father, Father, let's go home. Let's go back home. Father says, what's all of a sudden made you go? What, all of a sudden you changed your mind? You were going back home? He says, yes. I've just remembered that I too have a son. And my son is going to do exactly the same to me as I'm doing to you. So sometimes it's an insurance policy. We don't want our children to see us being bad to our parents, because that's the Rishoyim. Esau has this cheshbon. There are other cheshbonis. I recommend this shir of Rabbi Dessler. Koros HaTov, kibbutz v'ayim. Let's go on. So Esau does a mitzvah. He does it very, very well. Yeah, he does it perfectly, whatever his intentions. And even though his intentions may not have been perfect, his actions certainly was, and therefore it has a good result. So actions and intentions both leave their mark. When Esav put meat in front of Yitzchak, Yitzchak can taste the kibbadav in that meat. He picks it up and it tastes it. Yitzchak can't tell the difference between venison meat and gedi meat. Yeah, he's long, long past it, as we learned from Kushi Arki. Long past it, but what he can taste and what he's lived all his life for is the fact that he can pick up a mitzvah within that meat. And that's why the li so often. And now when Rivka says to Yaakov, and she uses similar expressions, quoting Yitzchak with all those li's, and also makes a li of her own, she says to Yaakov, now you've got to do an act of kibbud aim that will match what Esav would have done and what Esav has done in the past, that Yitzchak will instantly take. So you've got to put in that same effort. And that's why Yitzchak instructs Esav, wanting you to have lots of effort. Don't just pick out something for the backyard, but lots of effort. Put all your skill and strength and your cunning into capturing this animal. And he put it all in for kibbud av, I will pick up that mitzvah. Says Rivka to Yaakov, now I want you to do the same. Ah, but Yaakov's going to take his gedi from the backyard. The answer is that Yaakov is the great Ish Emes, Titen Emes Le Yaakov. And he's being asked to do something that his whole nature and his whole character cries out and screams against doing this act. He can't do it. But Rivka says to him, you do it for me. You do it as a supreme act of kibbud aim. And when you do that, then the same mitzvah that Esav would have put in, you can match it by putting it into the gedi. And therefore we have a complete balance here between the two. So Yaakov does that and he achieves exactly the same. And that's really what we want out of our lives, is it not? You know, sometimes, of course, Yitzchak now cannot tell the difference, because he doesn't tell the difference between venison and goat. He tells the difference between mitzvah, and now he's got the same mitzvah, kibbud av and kibbud aim are exactly the same mitzvah, all mentioned in one line in the Torah. So now he picks up the mitzvah that Yaakov has given him. And so Yaakov does this supreme act of self-sacrifice, so to speak, and therefore achieves the same as Esav would have. Fact is, this is what it's all about. You know, sometimes we're talking about two working men. The idea is that we shouldn't just work to earn money in order to feed ourselves, to work to earn money to feed ourselves and have this internal cycle of just living in this world for the sake of this world. It's always got to be for something higher. Simcha shel mitzvah. The effort that's got to be put in to doing a mitzvah and to making it work for us in such a way that it elevates us. And indeed, this is really what we try to aim for. This is what we try to run our lives on that basis. B'chol d'rochecha do'edu. Everything we do, we should have the Rabbi Mishloinim there. We should bring the Rabbi Mishloinim with us. As you may have heard of one thing, of something that the Sefer Chinuch, it seems he composed this, but it's been brought and expanded by others. They're called the Sheish Mitzvahs Tamidis. The six constant mitzvahs. The first one of them, I'll just take one example, random say. First one is Emunah. Emunah is mitzvahs tamidis. And the question that the Sforim ask is this. Any mitzvah tamidis, how can I do a mitzvah all the time? I can't think of the Baruch Shalom all the time. I've got to do my work. I've got to do other things in life. I can't think of the Baruch Shalom all the time. How can it be a mitzvah? How can there be such a concept as a mitzvah tamidis? And the answer is that a person who's a ma'amin doesn't just behave differently when he's thinking about the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everything a person does is informed, guided, illuminated by that Emunah. So his Emunah permeates everything that he does. That's why it's Tamidus. His Tamidus is there all the time in every single action. In every word they say, it's going to be different from somebody who's not a Ma'amin. And therefore, this is what we aim for. This is what we want. And Mesillas Yeshayahu says, Yisoyt as a chasidus, v'shoyish ha'avoido, Atmima, she's barer, is ame ma chayvos sodoylo. That the Mesillas Yeshayahu starts off with our duty is to find out why we are here. Everything's here for a purpose. If there is a purpose, I am part of that purpose. And if I'm achieving my purpose, I'm going to achieve my potential. If I can get it through mitzvah, that is the ideal. And we hope that we will be able to do that, imbue our children with the same ideas, and it will be the toivas kol Yisrael. And therefore, it just leaves me to wish you all a very good chance.
Can you go on a bit more?
Go ahead.